Chapter 25. When the eldest son was gone, Wang Lung felt the house was purged of some surcharge of unrest, and it was a relief to him. He said to himself that it was a good thing for the young man to be gone. And now he could look to his other children and see what they were, for what with his own troubles and the land which must be planted and harvested in season, whatever might happen elsewhere, he hardly knew what he had for children after his eldest son. He decided, moreover, that he would early take the second lad out of school, and he would apprentice him to a trade, and not wait for the wildness of young manhood to catch him and make him a plague in the house as the older one had been. Now the second son of Wang Lung was as unlike the elder as two sons in a house may be. Where the elder was tall and big-boned and ruddy-faced, as men of the north are, and like his mother, this second one was short and slight and yellow-skinned. And there was that in him which reminded Wang Lung of his own father, a crafty, sharp, humorous eye, and a turn for malice if the moment came for it. And Wang Lung said, "Well, and this boy will make a good merchant, and I will take him out of school and see if he can be apprenticed in the grain market. It'll be a convenient thing to have a son there where I sell my harvests, and he can watch the scales and tip the weight a little in my favor." Therefore he said to Kaku one day, "Now go and tell the father of my eldest son's betrothed that I have something to say to him, and we should at any rate drink a cup of wine together, seeing that we are to be poured into one bowl, his blood and mine." Kaku went then and came back, saying, "He will see you when you wish, and if you can come to drink wine this noon, it's well, and if you wish it, he will come here instead." But Wang Lung didn't wish the town merchant to come to his house, because he feared he would have to prepare this and that, and so he washed himself and put on his silk coat, and he set out across the fields. He went first to the street of Bridges, as Kaku had told him, and there, before a gate which bore the name of Liu, he stopped. Not that he knew the word himself, but he guessed the gate, two doors to the right of the bridge, and he asked one who passed, and the letter was the letter of Liu. It was a respectable gate, built plainly of wood, and Wang Lung struck it with the palm of his hand. Immediately it opened, and a woman servant stood there, wiping her wet hands on her apron as she spoke to ask who he was. And when he answered his name, she stared at him, and led him into the first court where the men lived, and she took him into a room and bade him seat himself. And she stared at him again, knowing he was the father of the betrothed of the daughter of the house. Then she went out to call her master. Wang Lung looked about him carefully, and he rose and felt of the stuffs of the curtains in the doorway, and examined the wood of the plain table, and he was pleased, for there was evidence of good living, but not of extreme wealth. He didn't want a rich daughter-in-law, lest she be haughty and disobedient, and cry for this and that of food and clothes, and turn aside his son's heart from his parents. Then Wang sat down again and waited. Suddenly there was a heavy step, and a stout elderly man entered, and Wang Lung rose and bowed, and they both bowed, looking secretly at each other, and they liked each other, each respecting the other for what he was, a man of worth and prosperity. Then they seated themselves, and they drank of the hot wine which the servant woman poured out for them, and they talked slowly of this and that, of crops and prices, and what the price would be for rice this year if the harvest were good. And at last Wang Lung said, "Well, and I have come for a thing, and if it isn't your wish, let us talk of other things. But if you have need for a servant in your great market, there is my second son. And a sharp one he is, but if you have no need of him, let's talk of other things." Then the merchant said with great good humor, "And so I have such need of a sharp young man, if he reads and writes." And Wang Lung answered proudly, "My sons are both good scholars, and they can each tell when a letter is wrongly written, and whether the wood or the water radical is right. "That is well," said Liu. "And let him come when he will, and his wages at first are only his food until he learns the business. And then after a year, if he do well, he may have a piece of silver at the end of every moon. And at the end of 3 years, 3 pieces. And after that he is no longer apprentice, but he may rise as he is able in the business. And besides this wage, there is whatever fee he may extract from this buyer and that seller, and this I say nothing about if he is able to get it. And because our two families are united, there is no fee of guarantee I will ask of you for his coming."
Wang Lung rose then, well pleased, and he laughed and said, "Now we are friends. And have you no son for my second daughter?" Then the merchant laughed richly, for he was fat and well fed, and he said, "I have a second son of 10, whom I have not betrothed yet. How old is the girl?"
Wang Lung laughed again and answered, "She is 10 on her next birthday, and she is a pretty flower." Then the two men laughed together, and the merchant said, "Shall we tie ourselves together with a double rope?" Then Wang Lung said no more, for it wasn't a thing that could be discussed face to face beyond this. But after he had bowed and gone away well pleased, he said to himself, "The thing may be done." And he looked at his young daughter when he came home, and she was a pretty child, and her mother had bound her feet well so that she moved about with small graceful steps. But when Wang Lung looked at her thus closely, he saw the marks of tears on her cheeks, and her face was a shade too pale and grave for her years, and he drew her to him by her little hand, and he said, "Now, why have you wept?" Then she hung her head and toyed with a button on her coat and said, shy and half murmuring, "Because my mother binds a cloth about my feet more tightly every day, and I can't sleep at night."
"Now, I haven't heard you weep," he said, wondering.
"No," she said simply, "and my mother said I wasn't to weep aloud because you are too kind and weak for pain, and you might say to leave me as I am, and then my husband would not love me even as you don't love her."
This she said as simply as a child recites a tale, and Wang Lung was stabbed at hearing this. That Olan had told the child he didn't love her, who was the child's mother, and he said quickly,
"Well, and today I have heard of a pretty husband for you, and we will see if Kuku can arrange the matter."
Then the child smiled and dropped her head, suddenly a maid and no more a child. And Wang Lung said to Kuku on that same evening when he was in the inner court,
"Go and see if it can be done."
But he slept uneasily beside Lotus that night, and he woke and fell to thinking of his life, and of how Olan had been the first woman he had known, and how she had been a faithful servant beside him. And he thought of what the child said, and he was sad, because with all her dimness, Olan had seen the truth in him. In the near days after this, he sent his second son away into the town, and he signed the papers for the second girl's betrothal, and the dowry was decided upon, and the gifts of clothing and jewelry for her marriage day were fixed. Then Wang Lung rested, and he said to his heart, "Well, and now all my children are provided for, and my poor fool can do nothing but sit in the sun with her bit of cloth. And the youngest boy I will keep for the land, and he shall not go to school, since 2 can read, and it is enough." He was proud, because he had 3 sons, and 1 was a scholar, and 1 a merchant, and 1 a farmer. He was content then, and he gave over thinking any more about his children. But whether he would or not, there came into his mind the thought of the woman who had borne them for him. For the first time in his years with her, Wang Lung began to think about Olan. Even in the days of her new coming, he had not thought of her for herself, and not further than because she was a woman, and the first he had known. and it seemed to him that with this thing and that he had been busy and without time to spare, and only now, when his children were settled and his fields cared for and quiet under the coming of winter, and now, when his life with Lotus was regulated and she was submissive to him since he had beat her, now it seemed to him he had time to think of what he would. And he thought of Olan. He looked at her. Not because she was woman this time, and not that she was ugly and gaunt and yellow-skinned. But he looked at her with some strange remorse, and he saw that she had grown thin, and her skin was sere and yellow. She had always been a dark woman, her skin ruddy and brown when she worked in the fields. Yet now, for many years, she hadn't gone into the fields except perhaps at harvest time, and not then for 2 years and more, for he disliked her to go, lest men say, "And does your wife still work on the land, and you rich?" Nevertheless, he hadn't thought why she had been willing at last to stay in the house, and why she moved slowly and more slowly about. And he remembered, now that he thought of it, that in the mornings sometimes he heard her groaning when she rose from her bed, and when she stooped to feed the oven, and only when he asked, "Well, and what is it?" did she cease suddenly. Now, looking at her and at the strange swelling she had on her body, he was stricken with remorse, although he didn't know why. And he argued with himself. "Well, and it's not my fault if I haven't loved her as one loves a concubine, since men do not." And to himself he said for comfort, "I haven't beat her, and I've given her silver when she asked for it." But still he couldn't forget what the child had said. And it pricked him, although he didn't know why, seeing that when he came to argue the matter out, he had always been a good husband to her, and better than most. Because he couldn't be rid of this unease toward her, then, he kept looking at her as she brought in his food or as she moved about. And when she stooped to sweep the brick floor one day after they had eaten, he saw her face turn gray with some inner pain. And she opened her lips and panted softly. And she put her hand to her belly, although still stooping as though to sweep. He asked her sharply, "What is it?" But she averted her face and answered meekly, "It's only the old pain in my vitals." Then he stared at her, and he said to the younger girl, "Take the broom and sweep, for your mother is ill." And to Olan he said more kindly than he had spoken to her in many years, "Go in and lie on your bed, and I will bid the girl bring you hot water. Don't get up." She obeyed him slowly and without answer, and she went into her room, and he heard her dragging about it, and at last she lay down and moaned softly. Then he sat listening to this moaning until he couldn't bear it. And he rose and went into the town to ask where a doctor's shop was. He found a shop recommended to him by a clerk in the grain market where his second son now was, and he went to it. There the doctor sat idle over a pot of tea. He was an old man with a long gray beard and brass spectacles large as an owl's eyes over his nose. And he wore a dirty gray robe whose long sleeves covered his hands altogether. When Wang Lung told him what his wife's symptoms were, he pursed his lips and opened a drawer of the table at which he sat, and he took out a bundle wrapped in a black cloth, and he said, "I will come now." When they came to Olan's bed, she had fallen into a light sleep, and the sweat stood like dew on her upper lip and on her forehead, and the old doctor shook his head to see it. He put forth a hand as dried and yellowed as an ape's hand, and he felt for her pulse. And then after he had held it for a long time, he shook his head again gravely, saying, "The spleen is enlarged, and the liver diseased. There is a rock as large as a man's head in the womb.
The stomach is disintegrated. The heart barely moves, and doubtless there are worms in it."
At these words, Wang Lung's own heart stopped, and he was afraid. And he shouted out angrily, "Well, and give her medicine, can you not?" Olan opened her eyes as he spoke and looked at them, not understanding and drowsy with pain. Then the old doctor spoke again.
"It is a difficult case. If you do not wish guarantee of recovery, I will ask for fee 10 pieces of silver, and I will give you a prescription of herbs and a tiger's heart dried in it and the tooth of a dog, and these boil together and let her drink the broth. But if you wish complete recovery guaranteed, then 500 pieces of silver."
Now, when Olan heard the words 500 pieces of silver, she came suddenly out of her languor, and she said weakly,
"No, and my life is not worth so much. A good piece of land can be bought for so much."
Then when Wang Lung heard her say this, all his old remorse smote him, and he answered her fiercely,
"I will have no death in my house, and I can pay the silver."
Now when the old doctor heard him say, "I can pay the silver," his eyes shone greedily enough. But he knew the penalty of the law if he didn't keep his word and the woman died. And so he said, although with regret,
"Nay, and as I look at the color of the whites of her eyes, I see I was mistaken. 5,000 pieces of silver must I have if I guarantee full recovery."
Then Wang Lung looked at the doctor in silence and in sad understanding. He hadn't so many pieces of silver in the world unless he sold his land. But he knew that even though he sold his land, it was no avail. For it was simply that the doctor said, "The woman will die." He went out with the doctor, therefore, and he paid him the 10 pieces of silver, and when he was gone, Wang Lung went into the dark kitchen where Olan had lived her life for the most part, and where now that she was not there, none would see him. And he turned his face to the blackened wall, and he wept.